if ye apply every bit of it. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting, but the substance of a diligent man is precious. Okay, cross-reference on that is 18, verse 9. Proverbs 18, verse 9, he also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster. Okay, and this is where one of the big problems in America is people waste so much. You, just in your own households, we throw out more every week than most people in the world even get in a week. We throw it out, especially food. You know, just go to restaurants and see how much people throw out. And if you eat like we do, it seems like you're constantly throwing out stuff because you didn't store it right. You know, you got to learn how to keep these things. But notice it says, but the substance of a diligent man is precious. Americans give away too much, really. And people give a lot of time to the kids, and the kids don't appreciate it because they didn't have to work for it. And Mike Roberts has a pretty good hold on this in Vietnam. You know, he don't want to give Bibles to any of his preachers because the Vietnamese culture is that they want to make sure they pay for it. So obviously he loses money, but he lets them pay for it somehow, some way, so they appreciate it more. And, of course, in America, the government programs are now called entitlements, where you are entitled to it. And I'm not saying you're wrong if you do get something, because you obviously fork out so much. Yeah, there's times you probably should or could. But in Americans, waste is unbelievable. In the Bible, somebody who wastes things is equal to somebody who's lazy. You know, throwing out, you know, I remember in high school, if you threw a penny to the ground, if anybody picked a penny up, you know, they always laughed at them. You know, I picked a penny up, picked a penny up. I'd pick them up. Yeah. I'm Dutch. I may be sly about it sometimes, but as far as this country goes, I guess the only way people are going to get over it is if they have a depression, and then everything becomes real precious to them.
Right.
It's unbelievable how much we waste in our country. Now, the Lord kind of gave us an example about this when he fed the 5,000, or at least 5,000 men, and he fed them from two loaves, or two fishes and five loaves, or something like that. And then he picked up the fragments. You would have thought, forget it. But that's what the Lord did. And so everything we have should be something very precious to us. Kids a lot of times leave their stuff hanging out, you know, out in the lawn or doing this. They don't take care of it. They got to be taught to take care of these things. People are funny with machines in that they just throw them, you know, throw the tools down instead of setting them down. Then they break and they can't figure out why they last as long. Or they, you know, run their machine. They've got to run a full board all the time, ram it here, ram it there, ram everything. And then they wonder why it breaks. Some trucking firms like to have women truck drivers because they're more gentle with the truck than the men are in some cases. And the thing is we got to take care of things. We waste so much. Of course, nowadays, some of your electronic devices, it's cheaper to throw it away and go get a new one rather than get it fixed. So it's a lot of times a matter of economics, but it's a matter of treating the thing the way it is made and take care of things. Okay, so in the Bible, somebody who's lazy, a slothful man, roasteth not that which he took in hunting. An example is your garden. You take the time to plant it, take the time to weed it, and then you always wait too long to harvest it. And it sits out there and rots. Okay, you take the time to go out hunting, and then you put off cleaning it for a while. Or you go out fishing, you don't clean the fish for a while. That's the idea there. Okay, and of course we've all been there. Okay, and so this is a matter of slothfulness. A lot of times we'll do a job and then we don't clean up. Then a paintbrush dries with the paint in it. And your job is not done until everything is put away that you got out, put back where you found it. And a lot of times when you have a potluck, both churches and this church are very good at that, in that as soon as we're done, everybody just pitches in and puts things away. In a lot of places, people are anxious to get it going, have the tables up, and then go home and forget to put it away. Okay, and so this verse, you see, as far as the Bible goes, you can apply that verse in many different ways. Okay, you have one interpretation of a passage, but you can apply it in many, many different ways. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting, but the substance of a diligent man is precious. He takes care of things. Okay, a lot of times we're buying stuff where we should have just took care of it the first time. And a lot of American economics, obviously I understand that the economic structure in America is all whacked. When it should be on gold and silver standard, and it's on inflation and taxes. Of course, that's a very subtle way for the banks and the government to get larger and larger and larger and make the people get smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's a very tricky way where people admire the bankers because of their help when they don't realize that the banker has been stealing from them. Now, who in the bank would know these things? Probably only the president and the vice president. Not the tellers. You know, I don't go to the tellers and look at them and say, "You're a thief." You know, I say, "Thank you, have a good day," and all that stuff to them. They don't know any better about those things. But the presidents, Gene tells about a guy who was a president of a bank that got saved, and after he had his first so-called loan, he sold the bank, got out of the business because he realized that the loan wasn't a loan. He realized he was picking it out of thin air. He realized that it was an exchange. He realized that the borrower gave the bank his promise of future employment. He sold it and then gave money to the person in charge of interest, and the bank don't invest one penny. Not one penny. And the Federal Reserve publications will tell you the same thing. They do not loan out the depositors' money. They can't do that. That's illegal. They do not loan out their money. They create it from thin air, and then they foreclose on people who don't gift to them a fraudulent contract, and they get away with it. You know, that was one thing I was trying to fight in the courts down there in Rensselaer. The judge of who don't like what's going on. Okay, and so in America, this is terrible. It's a sin to waste things. God is holding us accountable for being a steward of what we have, being a good steward of what we have. A man that's faithful in least is faithful in much. And so a lot of times people say, you know, really the ones you find who waste more than anybody will be in the projects. Dumpster diving, you know, dumpster shopping. You'll find probably more good items in the dumpsters in the poor areas than you will in the rich areas. They don't get wealthy by squandering it a lot of times. They take care of what they have. A lot of people are poor because they just don't take care of what they have. We're in a throwaway society, is what we are. So Proverbs 12:27, that's Obviously, in Hebrew, we can change it so it makes us feel better about ourselves. It didn't really say what I think it said, but it's still there. Okay, verse 28, the way of righteousness. In the way of righteousness is life. And in the pathway of, there is no death. Okay, the way of righteousness. Look, if you would, in Matthew 21, 32. And this is what John the Baptist preached, Matthew 21, 32. Where in the Old Testament, the faith and work structure that they had under the Old Testament in that a man, personal righteousness, his righteousness became personal, where in the New Testament, the righteousness that we have is the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Matthew 21, verse 32, for John came unto you in the way of righteousness, and ye believed him not. But the publicans and the harlots believed him, and ye, when ye had seen it, repented not afterward, that ye might believe him. Okay, it has been said that a man who lives his life to do right, he lives and follows his conscience, eventually will get saved. I don't know if that's true or not, but if a man does right and obeys right, and he does follow his conscience, I know the Lord will get the gospel to him, like Cornelius. And Cornelius did respond and got saved. So the way of righteousness is life, and that's the narrow road. And in the pathway thereof, there's no death, as far as living right. Okay, chapter 13, 1. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. Rebuke, reproof. That is why people don't read the Bible, don't like the Bible, because it reproves them. Okay, a wise man, look in Habakkuk chapter 2. Habakkuk chapter 2. Three little chapters in here. And Habakkuk is appealing to God about his judging of people and his mercy. He's asking the Lord questions about these things. But he's got a lot of sense about them. Habakkuk 2, verse 1. He says, I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower, and will watch to see what he will say unto me. Okay, he's talking about the questions that he's asked in chapter 1 to the Lord. You'll see in verse 17, it's a question. Verse 14 is a question. Verse 13 is a question. Verse 12, you got a question. He's asking the Lord questions about judgment and about iniquity and about God judging Israel. And so when he asks these questions, he says, well, I'm going to wait and see what he's going to say to me. And then he says, and what I shall answer when I am reproved. See that? He was asking the Lord questions what he thought was maybe not fair or maybe was inconsistent with God's character. You're a holy God, but yet you're looking on iniquity down here. But yet he knew that when he asked these questions from his perspective, he was probably dead wrong, and he knew God was going to reprove him when he answered them. And that's how often it is, you know, when we don't understand things, how God works things, and we ask him the question about these things, we're wrong and he's right. And when we find out his reasoning behind it, we'll find out why he's right. Genesis 18:25, before the Lord judged Sodom, it says, shall not the judge of the earth do right? God was right when he judged Sodom. Even though 99.9% of the Christians today wouldn't agree with that. God was right when he judged Gomorrah. Killed all the little babies, the little children, the big children, the teenagers, the men, the women, the old folks. God was right when he tortured them all. Killed them all. And shall not the judge of the earth do right? God was right when he sent Ivan through Florida and did what he did. He was right. He controls these things. And you see, those are hard questions to ask or to consider when you see a good, holy or righteous or good Christian couple trying to do right, trying to feel and find the will of God, and maybe can never have children or anything like that. And then you see other, or if they have a child die on them like that, they see somebody where they have a child die on them, and then they see other people who don't care about God, and their children seem to be as healthy as could be. See, and God's right about these things. And in the end, the Lord will explain to us why he did what he did. And at that point, we'll find out, hey, he was right. Often the story is told about a little child, sees mama sitting up on the, you know, the rocking chair embroidering or doing something like that. From his perspective, it looks like a mess, but from her perspective, she sees the pattern that she's following. Okay, and that's what life's like, too. We're looking at this thing down here from our perspective. It looks like a mess, but God gave us the pattern right here. This Bible's a pattern. And so the more time we spend in this book, then the more we understand what's going on. So a wise son heareth his father's instruction. He's going to listen to him. But a scorner heareth not rebuke. Okay, that scorner's not going to listen to rebuke, so what are you going to do when you rebuke him? He's going to hate you. You'll see that back in chapter 9, I think it is. Don't waste your breath on a scorner. Chapter 9, verse 8. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Okay, so that's one. Again, as we go through these Proverbs, many of them can stand on their own, just simple little statements. A man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of transgressors shall eat violence. Okay, doctrinally, tribulation time period, but even at that, cross-references, you can go to Proverbs, 12:14, a man shall be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth. Okay, so our words mean things. And we don't realize how our words spoken affect people. You know, if a parent keeps saying to their child, you're an idiot, 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 the kid's going to think he's an idiot. And you're throwing a curse on them in a way. And the thing is we've got to be careful about the words we say. Okay, so a man should eat good by the fruit of his mouth. The fruit of his mouth can be the words of his mouth. And I went through this in back in chapter 12, verse 14, where you judge a man by his fruit. Okay? By his fruit, it says in Matthew 7. Now, a lot of people say the fruit means works, but if you understand the words, you can tell the product by the words. Why wait long time for the words to bear witness with the work? When you know what the words say, and when the words say what they say, then it's going to be an automatic, the work's going to come out. So you don't have to wait a lot of time. Now, in the millennium, obviously, they can wait for a man's works because you're going to live a long time. Okay, but if you can, shall we say, cut it off at the pass, understand the words of people. Now, we had some very, very wise people back in 1913 when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, very few of them, but there were a couple, two, three wise ones, like Charles Lindbergh was one, probably why his child was kidnapped. But he said that the Federal Reserve was going to be a gigantic trust on America, and it was going to destroy America. If you read the Federal Reserve publications, you know, they get so ooey and gooey in there how You know, everything was a mess before the Federal Reserve came along, and by their good graces and sound wisdom, you know, we have stabilized everything. Of course, they ignore the Great Depression. That's real stabilized stuff. And so these men were warning these things. You know, today in Congress, probably one of the best ones that I know of is Ron Paul, and he spoke out against the Patriot Act. And, you know, thank God, you know, you're going to have one or two or three here or there. During Civil War, there was a congressman from Ohio. I think his name Vanderham or something like that, where he spoke out against Abraham Lincoln, said he was a tyrant, he was issuing martial law, and Abraham Lincoln had him arrested with no charge and suspended his writ of habeas corpus, and then I had about 2,000 people in Ohio protested, and I think finally he did get out. But you see, that's a rare thing. There was a state representative down in Oklahoma that spoke out about the Oklahoma bombing. You know, a lot of times when somebody speaks out, people say, well, you're just an idiot. You're just a peon. You're just somebody who don't know what you're talking about. Hey, when you got somebody that's been there, Charles Keyes, I think was his name. Keyes, right, K-E-Y, Senator Keyes. And he mentioned that there were, you know, more than one explosion in that. Uh-huh. Did he? Right. Write a book about it. And then there was also a military man that was one of the experts in our country on when he looks at explosions. Explosives. And he said there was no way a truck bomb could have did that damage. Interestingly, on the third floor of that building was all the evidence of Waco. And usually when they have a tragedy like this, they don't try to cover up the evidence so fast. So obviously, you know, when they do stuff like this so obvious and blatant, that's the way you get more converts in America. It's a rough way to get them. But people get asking questions about those things. And no doubt if you would go around Oklahoma City today, if you go door to door and start asking questions, you'd probably find some people that said they heard the second explosion and saw the FBI carrying out an explosive out of the building and things like that. And you see, when we talk about these things, people think, well, you just, you know, you weren't there, you don't know what's going on. And I don't. I wasn't there. So I got to rely on people who have the ability to investigate these things, like this senator and these people. And there's plenty of evidence out there. There's one documentary put together, and we have a video of it, called Rules of Engagement. You watch that, and you just get mad what happened at Waco. People say, well, he was a nut. Well, is that our right in our country to be a nut? And they could have picked him up any time they wanted. Why did they show up in Sunday school at 9:30 on a Sunday morning? The guy jogged about every week. Why didn't they just pick him up? You see, all these things, you ask these questions, you just, what's going on in our country is just phenomenal. The cover-ups, the lies, how people can be manipulated. And no doubt this is going to be increased more and more in the tribulation, where they can project images in the sky and make it look like somebody's floating down, and they can pretend that HARP is going to change the weather patterns, you know, up in Alaska. And I think God's got a sense of humor. I think he just, when they push the buttons, he just goes along with them to make them feel like it's working. And then when it comes to the tribulation, he's going to do the exact opposite of what they're doing. Hey, this thing's not working anymore. Okay, so Proverbs 13, verse 3. He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life. But he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. Now, it may seem strange, that's a strange thing. You know, they say silence is golden. And sometimes there is. And a man of knowledge will have few words. Chapter 17. Chapter 17, verse 27. He that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Proverbs 17, 27. He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, but he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. Now, probably that applies more than anything, and hopefully you don't have to experience this, is when a policeman or public official starts asking you questions. They prey on honesty. But you see, you have a right to remain silent. People sit there and watch cops all the time, and they don't even recognize all the broken laws. The Constitution's broken time and time again on that show. And I understand when they're working in inner cities, things are tough, but you still, that Constitution's there for our protection. And you have a right to remain silent. And I guess what you're supposed to do is when any public official starts talking to you, they ask you a question, you answer the question with the question. That's the best route to go. Policeman tells you to do something. Is that a lawful order? Yes, that's a lawful order. Okay, what statute or regulation are you trying to enforce? If they can't name it, then it's not a lawful order. You know, is your name so-and-so? My name is of no consequence. None of their business. Glenn Peterson had a case up in Chicago, and he wanted me to serve some attorney. And, you know, it is fun to serve attorneys. You know, attorneys hate to get served and hate to get sued. Like, we like it. You know, we love getting sued. We love getting served. And so I had his paper, and I walked to this young buck attorney and served it on. And he said, I said, oh, you need these, sir. And then he looked at me and said, what's your name? I said, my name is of no consequence. Turned around, walked away, and he said, oh, these common law servants, you're not a valid server, process server. And I said, I'm above 18. Anybody 18 or over is a process server. And so he was, in essence, telling me in the hallway that this was all invalid, but then he goes into the courtroom 5 minutes later, and those papers came up, and the guy said, oh, I don't know, I just got served these papers. Well, I thought he just told me that it wasn't proper, what I just did. See, and the thing is choose to remain silent. They ask you a question, I choose to remain silent. That's the answer. We were down there street preaching in DeMott, and across the road was a policeman, a woman cop. And Luke was standing outside with his little sign, and she asked him, what church are you from? And he almost said, I'm sorry, I cannot answer any questions without advice of counsel. Which is the right answer. And that's what you do. You say, why? Because they'll twist your words to say what they want them to say. News media people are just like the same. I wouldn't say a thing to a news person. Several years ago, I was down at Kankakee Valley High School, and you know, I had two news people come up to me after I gave a little three-minute spiel. And the one says, I'd like to ask you a question. I said, you write it down on a piece of paper, and I'll answer it. And then you have to publish my entire answer. He walked away. And see, what you do is then you put your name at the bottom and write a little C and circle it, and then put the date, and that copyrights it. And if they publish it, you could sue them for violating your copyright. That's all that it takes. Because they're going to misquote you. I view the news media as buzzards flying over a carcass. Lenin, Trotsky, Marx, all journalists. And these news media people think they're God. And I enjoyed it. One time we had a meeting here. I think Bill Cruz was running the meeting, and some news media guy came in here. And he was taking some pictures, and he came up here, took pictures looking at people. I walked up to him, and I said, "You can stand in the back." He said, "Well, I got to do my job." I said, "Do it in the back." So he started walking in the back, and he said, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm the pastor of this church. Stand in the back." I enjoyed that. Oh, did I enjoy that? So who am I? Well, I've got my press pass. You know, I got a press pass. If you publish something twice a year, then you are valid to press. And then we have a bulletin every week, so that's press pass. And so the guy left. He left whining because he didn't get his way. Look, if you were to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4. Now, obviously, there may be times where you do want to talk to news people and try to get good press when there's an obvious injustice. So when we went out, when we stood up for the law against this restaurant over here, you saw how the news media slammed our church. For what? Putting two little gospel tracts in a car? Calling it harassment? Okay, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 15. "But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters." Busybody. And other people, sticking their nose in your business. None of their business. Okay, and that's what the news media does. You know, have a good day, turn off the news. It's not news, it's propaganda. They're trying to manipulate our thinking. They're trying to control the elections. And that's what they're trying to control your thinking. I remember hearing a few years ago on WBBM, you know, I just happened to be listening to that for, you know, going traveling down the road. And I heard him say, "There are 4 protesters in Washington, D.C. burning an American flag." 4? And that is news? What if 4,000 went over and passed out tracts? Do you think they'd say anything? They wouldn't say a cotton-picking thing. They choose what they want to cover. And that's why they harp so much about the sodomites. They give them good press. Okay, and so it's none of their business. So as far as these things go, you just be wise and ask questions. Know your constitutional rights. Be polite. Be courteous. And just say, "I choose to remain silent." You know, "What are you doing here?" "Well, I choose to remain silent." "What's your name?" "Well, I choose to remain silent." You know, "What are you up to?" "Well, I choose to remain silent." That's all you have to do. Mm-hmm. What's that? Right. If you're by yourself, they got the gun, you better use your head. But if you got a video camera, like he often does, three preachers with his video camera, first thing a cop will do when he comes up, turn that off. Is that a lawful order? You can't order me to turn that off. Rodney King makes a bunch of money because somebody didn't turn it off. And so the thing is, choose to remain silent. You are innocent unless proven guilty, and you don't have to answer anything. And you need to understand these things. I learned these things the hard way. You know, through a tax audit. Fought the thing for a couple of years and found out it was voluntary from the start. Could have chose to remain silent. But even at that, they prey on honest people often what they do. People often tell on themselves. Okay, so it says, "He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, but he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. The soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing." That's a thief. "But the soul of the diligent shall be made fat." That's what a thief does. He's trying to get something for nothing. Most guys are in jail because they're trying to get something for nothing. A preacher friend from Michigan emailed me a funny video. This is a funny one. And what it is, it's a video, it's a camera in a store where a guy's going to come, walk in the store, run in the store, whip out his gun, armed robbery, and whip back out. Well, this guy runs in and whips out the gun, and it falls out of his hand, and it falls on the counter, and the guy behind the counter grabs the gun and points at it, and the guy runs out. I mean, that's what you call a stupid thief. Must have put butter on that gun, but that, oh, that's a blessing, stuff like that. Okay, well, what the thief's doing? He's trying to get something for nothing. He's lazy. I had a pious thief several years ago, and this guy in jail, he told me, he said, I've never hurt anybody. I just take their things. I don't beat on anybody. I don't take a gun. I just take their possessions. That hurts them. You feel violated when somebody breaks in your house or steals something of yours. Okay, so a lazy man, he desires and has nothing. Okay, spiritually. The soul, your soul, the sluggard, desireth. He wants to have the blessings of God. He would like to be used of God, but he's not being used of God because he's too lazy to read the Bible. Too lazy to get out there and do something for the Lord. And the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Okay, fat in the Bible is meaning blessed or the best. Okay, so obviously you have to be diligent about these things, diligent to keep your heart, diligent to do right, faithful to the task. Verse 5, a righteous man hateth lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and cometh to shame. A righteous man hateth lying. Boy, don't you hate to be lied to? I remember several years ago, about 2 weeks before harvest, out there when Stuckey's was there. The Stuckey's owner called Dad, called us up at the farm and said, we caught this kid, drove in your cornfield. So we go over to Stuckey's, and there's a car. It's got corn all the way under the, you know, all the way under the car. I mean, it's getting ready to get harvest 2 weeks, about 2 to 3 weeks later. And that kid sat in that car, and he looked at my dad, and he said, I didn't drive my car in your field. And I knew my dad. I looked at my dad, I thought he was going to... He walked away. I think he walked away because he wanted to hit the kid. And so when Dad walked away, I stepped over the window, and I said, fella, don't lie to my dad. I started preaching at the kid, and I went through the whole plan of salvation, preached at the kid for a while, and I don't know whatever happened to that. I think he had to pay for it. Did he have to pay for that? Charged him for that. But I tell you, lied. Especially when the corn's hanging on the car, especially when the guy caught him in the car. I mean, everything. Phenomenal. But people do it. Okay, so a righteous man hateth lying, and a wicked man is loathsome, and cometh to shame. Righteousness keepeth him that is upright in the way, but wickedness overthroweth the sinner. Doesn't look like it down here sometimes, but it will. Self-explanatory. Verse 7, there is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing. There is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. Okay, there you have a cross-reference. If you would, look at Ecclesiastes 5:12. Ecclesiastes 5:12. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. He's afraid somebody's going to steal it. Okay, the probably a better cross-reference on that is 2 Corinthians. You have two of them there in 2 Corinthians, 6:10 and 8:9. Okay, the idea in that proverb is there is that maketh himself rich yet hath nothing. Get rich quick schemes. Doing everything he possibly can to take something from somebody. He's losing everything. Okay, then the opposite is there is that maketh himself poor yet hath great riches, in that he's giving out to others. He's doing what he can to be a blessing to others. He's giving out of his own money to other people, and that's making him rich in that he's getting rewards in eternity. Okay, 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 10, Paul put it this way, and this is the ministry, verse 3. Give no offense in anything, that the ministry be not blamed. Verse 10, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich. As having nothing and yet possessing all things. Chapter 8, verse 9 of 2 Corinthians. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be rich. So we do the same thing. You help somebody out who's having a tough time. Several folks gave, you know, a wonderful offering for the folks down in Florida. It's a real blessing. Got a phone call from Kay thanking us so much for that. And Neil, the young couple down in Rensselaer that moved to Florida, he used it and bought a chainsaw. And using a chainsaw to help clean up crew. And boy, that's a blessing. He said that pizza place in the area, pizza's normally $12 or sell them for $7. And somehow they asked Neil, he asked Neil or broadcast it or something? He did it for him. And then he was on his CD or something? How did he do that? How did he get all those jobs? Oh, when he advertised pizza, that he'd mentioned that he's willing to help anybody, and he got like 15 jobs. And if he didn't have that, if we didn't send him the money, wouldn't have had the chainsaw, wouldn't have this extra help people, and he's getting paid for it, one job would be like $600. And that's a blessing. You see, that's like what Mike Roberts, Felipe mentioned, that's what Mike Roberts is doing in Vietnam, where instead of just giving something to the pastors, the poor pastors, he's buying them a cow. So they can get an income off of that in case he gets shipped out. They can still survive. Very wise thing to do. And so the idea is that when we give of our own funds, making ourselves poor, helping a brother in Christ is increasing our riches as far as heaven goes. He is no fool who gives up what he cannot lose. Okay, to give up what we cannot lose, we give up things down here so we have rewards in heaven. And the guy's a fool who tries to keep everything he's got down here, he's going to lose it dead anyway. Who's going to get it when they're dead and gone? Well, probably the attorneys and the government. If people don't take care of things the way they're supposed to. So, a very practical thing, there is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing, there is that make himself poor, yet hath great riches. The ransom of a man's life are his riches. But the poor heareth not rebuke. Now, I'd say that cross-reference, probably a good one on that would be Luke 16:10, where it talks about making friends of mammon, which is one of the most difficult passages to try to figure out about making friends of mammon. And I don't have a whole lot of light on that thing, but the idea looks like would be, okay, if you have some money, use it for God's glory. Okay, and use what you have for the Lord's glory. And, you know, think about the Lord. A lot of times people put up a plaque to somebody who's a great big large donor, you know, as far as a gift goes. But yet from God's perspective, the widow's mite was the largest donor they had that day. Or a dollar coming from a little child. You see, the Lord, thank God, he deals in percentages. Yeah. And he sees the whole picture. And boy, at the judgment seat there, all the truth is going to come out. Okay, verse 9. The light of the righteous rejoiceth. Okay, the light of the righteous. Jesus Christ is the light of the world. So if he's your light, he rejoices. He rejoices when we do right. Okay, but the lamp of the wicked shall be put out. Okay, there's a common saying. It can knock your lights out. Okay, there's a cross-reference on that to chapter 20, verse 20. Okay, but the light of the righteous rejoiceth. Light rejected becomes lightning. A lot of times people don't understand that when you reject light, as far as the light of God's Word, at that moment you have closed the door on any more information in the Bible until you accept the light that God gave you. Example, Jonah was told, go to Nineveh, preach on Nineveh. He rejected a light. The next time God spoke to him, he said, Jonah, go to Nineveh and preach unto it. And see, when a person rejects the light, the Lord will just keep harping on that same thing until the person accepts it. If they don't accept it, he'll just keep harping on it, and then eventually that thing's going to strike them dead. And that's why sometimes when people attend a church, they say, well, that's all that guy preaches about is this, and fill in the blank. And he may not have even mentioned it. But the reason why is that thing is on their mind because that's what they rejected, and the Lord brought it up again, even though they may not even heard the guy say it. And the thing is we've got to accept the light God gives us. And when we accept that light, then he gives us more light. Okay, verse 10. We can probably pick that one up next time. Any questions or comments? Okay, how about prayer requests? Anybody have prayer requests?
Prayer for tonight.
Pray for tonight.